comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the show. I'm delighted to be here, and I'm delighted you're here. It is talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. It is the show where you matter, and we're here because you have a right to know. K-Files is the name of our free weekly newsletter. If you're not getting it, why? If you're not getting it, where's the genius in that? Go on over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and click on the link, a big link right there in the middle of your screen. It says K-Files. Click on that, subscribe. You're going to get a confirmation email, and when you do, it has a link in it. You need to use that to activate your subscription. And once you do that, you are subscribed. Then you won't be in the dark perpetually, as so many people are. Our members area, boy, I'll tell you, there's some great news in the members area. It's coming along. I'll tell you, you know, we already have a great members area, but we've got some new digs we're going to move into real soon. And it's developing. It's coming along very, 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 very nicely. And I would encourage you, you know, the price for the members area is only $6.95 a month. It's nothing. 23 cents a day. It's nothing. But you get a whole lot for that. But the price is going to go up from $6.95 to $7.50 when we move into the new members community. And you can lock in that $6.95 price for the next year by joining today. Okay? When you join, before we move into the new members community, when you join, what's going to happen is you're locking in that $6.95 price for the next 12 months, $6.95 a month. Because that just comes with you over to the new members community. So you get another year at $6.95. And, I mean, where else are you going to get a year's discount? That's pretty good, huh? So be sure you join if you haven't already. You know, one of the cool things about the new members area is you are going to be able to share videos with your friends. You can upload videos. Similar to YouTube, not exactly the same, but similar to YouTube. Think YouTube. It's not the same, but similar. That's in the new members community. Last night's show has generated quite a number of responses from listeners, as I expected it would. You know, I love to read your comments about the shows, and I invite you to send me your comments, your thoughts about the shows. I invite you to exercise your freedom of speech and say what you think about shows, whether you like them or don't like them or whatever, anything in between. Just click on listener comments on our contact page and express yourself. I read every listener comment. I'd love to read yours. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. One real quick little announcement, kind of update thing, some information for you before we bring our esteemed guest on. Stanton Friedman is with us. He's on the telephone line with me, and we'll bring him on the air here in just a moment. I got an email. I get these every once in a while, but I got an email from somebody who said, you know, you claim that you have millions of listeners, and I checked at Shoutcast, and your stream only had about 200 listeners on it. And, you know, I think you're a fraud. Okay, I don't care what you think. Because, you see, the really dumb way to do broadcasting is to be a one-horse show. One stream, one place to hear it. I did something early with this show that almost no one else, well, at that time, nobody else had ever done it, as far as I know, and that is, this show is syndicated. Now, AM and FM stations are accustomed to syndicated shows. Internet radio was not. These days, we're not just internet radio. So you see 200 people listening on my stream, that's exactly what I want. That way I don't have to pay for all of the bandwidth it takes for millions of people to listen. This show is being heard on a number of networks who have affiliate stations. And just and a whole raft of affiliates that we have. And just on one affiliate out in Los Angeles tonight, we'll hit a million. Just on that one affiliate station. And so, you know, you can't use little league methods to track what we're doing. You can't track the major league with little league methods. Won't work, all right? But I invite you to check with all of our affiliate networks and all of our affiliate stations and ask all of them how many listeners they have. Because we do have an audience in the millions. And hey, if you doubt, just Google UFO talk show. Google UFO talk show. Okay. My guest this evening is Stanton Friedman, and it's always interesting, always exciting when he is with us, and he is with us tonight. Stanton Friedman, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Good. Glad to be on again. I'm intrigued with what you just talked about, because remember that the basic rule for debunkers of anything is don't bother me with the facts.
Yeah.
My mind's made up.
Stanton, I think you are the guy, I think you're the source of this, the phrase, the cosmic Watergate.
Well, I've been using it longer and more than anybody else, I think. I don't know if I started it. I probably, but what the heck.
Yeah. Well, you know, you and I, when I called and talked with you about being on the show with me tonight, that was several days ago, and we talked about various things we might discuss. Since that time, something popped up. It may have already been out there, but I didn't notice it. And when I noticed it, it was huge. And that is, after the test flight of the HTV-2B, the hypersonic aircraft that they say they lost, articles started showing up on the internet, not just in UFO blogs and forums, but on news sites and some well-known news sites. One of them, it was there and then it was gone, and that was USA Today. But an article or various versions of this showed up on all these sites where they talked about it, and they said that if this test was successful, that this vehicle could play a big role in, and now this is a quote, the The intergalactic defense projects the Pentagon is exploring. Now that's a quote. The intergalactic defense projects.
Intergalactic.
Yeah. And I did a show about that last night. I talked about that, and I explained for people who maybe didn't catch the importance of that. That's not just space-based weapons. That's dealing with something between the Milky Way and anywhere else.
Yeah, and that bothers me because I'm always running into people talking about intergalactic when they usually mean intragalactic, you know, within the galaxy.
Yeah.
So when you start talking about intergalactic, that changes it ups the ante, so to speak.
Well, it does. And, you know, the thing about it is lots of things about this made me think of the cosmic Watergate. All right, that's why I wanted to bring this up right off the bat. For one thing, the SR-71 is retired, and its top speed is still classified. They won't tell anybody. So here we have a test of allegedly our leading-edge new super, super, super-duper weapon, and DARPA goes on Twitter and announces to the world there's going to be a test. They tell people all over Twitter that this thing's top speed, it reaches speeds up to 13,000 miles per hour, Mach 20.
Yeah.
All right, so here we've got this new super-duper weapon in test phases, and they're telling us that its top speed is 13,000 miles per hour, when they will not tell us the top speed of the SR-71, which is retired. And they announced this to the whole world. So what I said last night, now I want to throw this at you and get your comment on this. I said the fact that they announced that as the top speed absolutely guarantees it's not. They're telling you how much they're going to let you see to impress you and to impress the world, but I guarantee you its top speed is way above that. Has to be. Because they still won't tell us the top speed of the SR-71.
Well, we have a very strange situation here, and trying to sort out the truth from the fiction is essentially impossible when you can't get all the data.
Yeah.
This thing, why did it stop running, for example, after, 9 minutes, I think?
No. The 9 minutes was the first test back in April. This one went 22 minutes. According to the Canadian Defense, the posting on the Canadian Defense site, it went 22 minutes. But look,
well,
here's the thing.
A mystery here, and I'm not surprised. We get so little truthful information when you try to pin things down. Lying has become a way of life.
Mm-hmm.
People say whatever is convenient to say and for whatever ulterior motive they have, and the truth be damned, frankly.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to do with that. I run across it all the time, but I've just read a long account by the ExoPolitics guys saying that we're heading for incredible catastrophes, and then it will be followed by an ascension phase and all this, a lot of gobbledygook. And they're quoting Russian scientists, including Marina Popovich, who was a test pilot and set a lot of records and all that sort of stuff, and was married to a cosmonaut that I'd met. And you read through it and you try to find out, well, okay, all kinds of claims, evidence, well, I didn't see any.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the planet's going to go to hell in a handbasket pretty quick, they say. And if we all get together in some kind of a strange thought process, we may save part of the planet, but you know, doom and gloom all over the place, but without anything you can get your mitts on. And I don't like things when you can't get your mitts on them, you know.
Yeah, well,
without evidence.
Here's the thing with this. I want to go back to this test for just one more point.
Yeah.
And get your response to this. It's curious to me that not only did they announce it has a top speed of Mach 20, although back in April when they did the first test, it hit Mach 22, and it did it in 9 minutes. But here they said it's got a top speed of Mach 20. That's 13,000 miles per hour, roughly. All right.
Yeah.
Not only did they announce this to the whole world, the thing went up, performed flawlessly up until it hit the top speed. When it hit the top speed, the telemetry comes down saying it's at 13,000 miles per hour, and then the telemetry shuts down, and they say, well, we lost it. I don't buy that for an instant. They had tracking stations all over this planet tracking that thing, and they say they lost it.
They lost the signal from it. They didn't say they lost it, I think.
Well, they were saying they think it crashed in the Pacific Ocean in a 4,000-mile swath there. They're not sure where. I don't buy that. They know exactly where that thing went. And I think what they did, this is, I want to get your comment on it. I'm going to go ahead and climb out on the limb. This is my speculation. I think they had pre-programmed it to prove a point to somebody. And when it proved that point, it was pre-programmed to shut down telemetry on the public telemetry channel. And I think the test continued well above 13,000 miles an hour. And the telemetry was being sent on a scrambled private channel. I don't think they lost it.
Well, one thing that bothers me is we've got lots of spy satellites up there, you know, and they should be capable of tracking it from above as opposed to, you know, from below.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, I didn't hear any comments about those, and if we can't track that, then how are we doing on ICBMs coming from other countries on the planet? You know, somehow it's not consistent. It was a whole peculiar story, I'll grant you that. And your hypothesis is as good as any, I think. Deception is an important part of the intelligence world, not just about things like Roswell, where there's been consistent deception, but about new weapons, new possibilities, you know, new means of doing things, and you have to fool people to get by, I think. And I don't know who's doing what.
Yeah.
Or even why, which is the more interesting question. What's the point of all this stuff? What's going on?
Well,
they don't believe in telling us.
Oh, no, they don't believe in telling us at all. But, you know, I just happened to have this rolling around in my head for several days now when I did the show last night, but I held off and waited on the cosmic Watergate angle. I think this is a fabulous example of part of the cosmic Watergate here. I know that you apply it mainly to flying saucers, but I think this is kind of out on the edge of it. I think it's part of it. I think it kind of shines a little light on the fact that there is a cosmic Watergate. When was the last time DARPA went on Twitter or anywhere else and publicly announced the test of a super-secret weapon and gave some of its specs?
It's pretty hard to imagine that they have done it even once, like this time. And so you're right. It raises all kinds of questions. Who are they trying to confuse?
Hmm.
Naturally, the American people, but that happens all the time. But who in this world or out of this world are they fooling around with? You know, and one of the things that, remember when Reagan and Gorbachev talked, and there was this discussion if there were an outside intruder, we and the Russians would work together, and Gorbachev agreed.
Yeah.
And so you wonder, is this geared up toward the outside intruder? Or, you know, when you couple this with the work of Hastings and Salas, the others who see where Earth nuclear weapons capabilities are being evaluated, impeded, whatever you want to call it, and you wonder whether we're trying to tell the aliens, hey, you can't stand in our way. We're developing new systems that'll take care of you guys. You know, I don't know what's going on. It would be nice to have some facts to go in the hopper, but I don't have any.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, another thing that I thought about is that what they were letting us see is basically obsolete. By the time any of us get to see anything, it's you know, the real state of their technology is generally 50 to 200 years ahead of what they let us see.
You mean the aliens or us?
No, our military.
Well, yeah, the military, you know, it's so hard to tell. Where does the military we know about end and the military we don't know about begin?
At the back door of the recruiter's office.
I guess. you know, it's part of this picture that lately I've been pushing the buttons that talk about the fact that from an outsider's viewpoint, we're a primitive society whose major activity is tribal warfare. And, you know, two numbers sum it up. We'll spend $1 trillion this year on things military. And 25,000 or so children die every single day needlessly of preventable disease or starvation. Now, that's a strange contrast, isn't it? It tells you a lot about our planet. But
yeah,
it's not good what it tells us, and it's not good what it tells anybody else. We're a warlike society. And we are definitely, and this is the place where the SETI people and the astronomers can't seem to focus, that we are a threat to others in the neighborhood. I mean, those guys think in terms of chemical rockets, and obviously there are several steps beyond chemical rockets, especially, let's say, nuclear fusion rockets. And so if I were an alien, I'd be worried about the idiots on Earth who have a strange sense of priority. You know, kids don't count, but power does.
We got to step away for a break, and we'll pick up right there when we come back. Folks, more with Stanton Friedman right after this.
Show, also known as the world's hottest talk show host.
All right, welcome back. My guest this evening is Stanton Friedman. Stanton, I had to cut you off right in mid-sentence there because the break took over. So the mic is yours.
Okay, well, these are strange times. There are weird things going on, no question. And it's hard to sort them out. And I don't know how many of your listeners noted, there's an article today in the Huffington Post. Lee Spiegel, who's been interested in UFOs since the 70s and runs the weird desk at Huffington Post, used to be AOL, but Huffington took it over, did a long interview with Nick Pope, the English UFO researcher. And in it, Nick made a number of comments about how, you know, there's this new release from the Ministry of Defense in England, 8,000 more pages of stuff about UFOs. None of it's top secret. But Nick admits to Lee that they were trying as hard as they could to keep people from thinking they were taking stuff seriously. They didn't have a lot of funding, and they tried to make it sound like there was nothing going on. And this is the first time that Nick has really spoken out along these lines. He's usually been very careful in not sticking his neck out. But I gather he's moving to the United States because he just married a woman from California. Maybe he figures it'll be easier to talk openly if he's not in England anymore.
He may get surprised about that.
Well, I don't know. I'm curious myself, and you know, I'm an American living in Canada, and now I'm a dual citizen. I have no idea what the difficulty is to move from England to the United States. You know, what the rules are, and can you work, which is always a good question if you move to another country.
Well, if you fly to Mexico, you can walk across.
Well, okay. But yeah, and you don't even need to pay taxes.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But that may shake a few people up. It just came out today. And Nick and I, you might be interested in a kind of bet that Nick and I have. We've known each other for many years, and I'm claiming that we will find out about extraterrestrial intelligence through ufology, the UFO world. He's saying we'll find out through the SETI world. You know, silly effort to investigate. Have to get that in there, SETI. And so it'll be interesting. But we got $100 running on this. I mean, that's a big bet. But and who knows when it's going to happen, and I certainly don't. But it would be interesting if other people jump in now that Nick has opened the door. Because a point I made, there's a website, UFO Updates, and we've been talking about some of this stuff. And a point I keep making is none of these releases from the MOD, Ministry of Defense in England, have involved top secret material. And I keep quoting General Bolander, Carol Bolander, who was the guy who wrote the memo that resulted in the closing of Project Blue Book way back in 1969. In his memo, he said reports which could affect national security are not part of the Blue Book system. And that came as quite a shock when I read that, and none of the major media have covered that, because the Air Force has been saying for more than 40 years that, oh, there is no national security aspect to UFOs, and we're not involved with UFOs anymore. And yet what Bolander said, and I spoke with Bolander, was that, yeah, you got two separate channels, and we're still looking at the stuff that could affect national security. But the press keeps getting told, or repeating at least, that the Air Force doesn't do anything about UFOs. And along those same lines, I just wrote my monthly column for the MUFON Journal on an article that appeared in the Air Force magazine. And it's by a man named John Correll, who was editor for 18 years for that magazine. He's a contributing editor now. And it's the United States Air Force and UFOs. And it's like somebody commissioned him to, hey, get these UFO guys off our back, get everything wrong. That'll stop them. And because he seems to have gotten everything wrong about Roswell, about Blue Book. He mentions the interesting omission. He mentions the congressional hearings in the mid-60s. That lasted for less than 2 hours, where there were official Air Force people talking, and that's it. He doesn't mention the congressional hearings in 1968, where there was testimony from 12 scientists, and the proceedings covered 247 pages, with outstanding articles by Jim McDonald and a bunch of other scientists. That's selective choice of data, I would say. And there are many other examples of this. He misrepresents what happened at Roswell, and you wonder why. Whose ox is he goring, so to speak?
Well, you know, don't you?
Back? I don't know.
You know why they said Roswell was a weather balloon, right? I mean, you know why they said it was a weather balloon. That's because they did not know about Chinese wedding candles at that time.
Ah, Well, hey, look, they had time travel for crash test dummies. Why not time travel for Chinese wedding candles?
Well, there you go. There you go. Speaking of travel, you know, one of the things that you and I have talked about in the past is development of new propulsion systems and getting away from chemical rockets. And one of the things that came up fairly recently, within the last couple of months or so, the director of Ames Research Center, Simon Warden, was speaking in San Francisco and said that they were, with DARPA funding, developing a brand new spacecraft called the 100-Year Starship. And that's kind of interesting in itself, but he, what really got my attention is when he said that it would use a new electromagnetic propulsion system. So it will not be a chemical rocket, apparently.
Well, I hope not. Nobody in his right mind would go to deep space with a chemical rocket. I mean, that would be like suggesting the Navy was using rowboats. You know, and I keep shocking people wherever I speak. It's been a very busy half year for me by pointing out that the Navy has aircraft carriers that can operate for 18 years without refueling, nuclear-powered ones, you understand.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you stand back from that and you say, wow, 18 years without refueling? Is that real? Yes, it is. That's a far cry from, you know, crank up the engine and refuel next week kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so electromagnetic, they're saying, or magnetohydrodynamic. You know, in my congressional testimony at the hearings that I was just talking about, July 29th, 1968, I talked about, I did it in a sort of question-answer format, and one of the things I talked about was magneto-aerodynamic propulsion systems. And when I, just after that, I did a literature search of the technical report literature, not the open scientific literature, but when you have government contracts, you have to write reports, you know, quarterly, semi-annual, annual, whatever, technical reports.
Yeah.
And I had this literature search done of those reports, and it turns out that I got 900 references. This isn't like 1970, you understand. 90% of those were classified. And I used only one word, magneto-aerodynamics. And so somebody was looking at this stuff, plasmas and magnetic fields and all this stuff, way back then. I mean, you know, if I'd gotten 90, I wouldn't have been surprised. But 900, that's a lot of work.
You know, well, and, yeah, and
you've got to look at this 100-year system.
Yeah, and this is sort of the point that I made earlier. Here you found that there were people doing very serious scientific work on this over 30 years ago. And, well, let's see, 41 years ago, if it was 1970. And so, you know, and we were just beginning to think sci-fi at that point. And then, you know, we had Star Trek came along, and man, that was really, really cool and all that. But it's, that's fiction. But those people were taking it seriously and actually working on it. Now, here we are 41 years later, and finally, we have a guy from NASA saying we have a new propulsion system we're going to use called the, it is an electromagnetic propulsion system. So we're finally going to get to see some of this, and they're beginning to talk about it in the open when it's been around for 41 years at least.
Yeah. We may see a glimmer of light here, but you never know whether these announcements are made with the purpose of influencing our enemies around the world or convincing our friends, hey, get behind us because we're the hot shots, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Same effect, kind of. So, I don't know. We live in a world of more fiction than fact, And I don't trust anything I hear from anybody. You know, I like to go to archives. I like to dig out facts, data. Oh, there's a story I should mention.
Okay.
I don't know whether you've had John Alexander as a guest on your program.
No.
He's written a book. He worked on non-lethal weapons. He's worked in intelligence. He worked at Los Alamos. Retired now. And he made a claim at the Arizona conference in February, I mean, in his new book, really, that a couple of claims that were of interest. One of them was that he and his buddies all had high-level security clearances, and they all had expected that they would be able to find where in the government the super-secret UFO program was. And he says, hey, you know what? We couldn't find one, so there must not have been one. Now, why anybody would tell them if there was one when none of them had a need to know for such information, I don't know. But he also said that the government has released, has disclosed already, and he cited a press statement supposedly made by President Truman at a press conference on April 4th, 1950, that flying saucers are not made on Earth. And I had heard this story before, and I'd never been able to find any truth behind it. So I checked at the Truman Library, just got back to word today that there was no press conference that day. They could find no record of his ever having said anything like that. And John put it out there. He put out something else, which I guess some people want to believe. He said, look, the Secretary of the Air Force, Sheila Widnall, back when the government was, for Congressman Schiff, was looking for data about Roswell, you know, that he said, John Alexander said, that Secretary Widnall said that anybody who had data that they thought was classified about Roswell was now free to release it. Except that's not what she said. She said they could tell Colonel Weaver, the guy who wrote the big Roswell report and whose specialty is disinformation, they could tell it to him because he had access to all special access programs.
We have to step away from break. We'll pick up right there when we come back. Ladies and gentlemen, more with Stan Friedman right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Stanton Friedman. And when we had to go away for break, Stanton, you were talking about this memo that came out clearing Air Force personnel to talk about Roswell. And you say it really didn't happen quite like that.
No, it did not. I have a copy of the memo. I suppose I should be posting it on my website. www.stantonfriedman.com, and I will try to do that. But she's very explicit, the Secretary of the Air Force, about approving, you know, offering amnesty, if you will, for people to talk to Colonel Weaver. He's the one who wrote that big 1,000-page monstrosity of a report about Roswell. But she says nothing at all about they can talk to anybody. Oh, no. And it would be amazing if she did, because with the whole need-to-know setup, how many people would have a need-to-know? She's saying Weaver had a need, had access to everything, but she didn't say anybody else did. And so you wonder, why is John Alexander, a bright guy, he's got a PhD, why he would say such things? Who is he working for? And I'm not trying to be a conspiracy theorist. It's just that he's too smart to say wrong things without knowing that he's saying wrong things. He also was wrong about MJ-12. He quoted from some old memos, but hadn't come up to date on them. And for people who think that, oh, everybody knows MJ-12 is phony, I would contradict them with my book, Top Secret Magic, M-A-J-I-C, and with a big article on the website about MJ-12. It's a four-part article, and it deals with all the objections made to the three documents I think are legitimate. There's 100 phony ones. Why do I care about them? It's the legitimate ones that matter.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the isotopes that are fissionable. Don't tell me about all the ones that aren't.
Yeah.
Or the drugs that don't cure any disease. If you're sick, give me the one that works. So, what's going on right now? Why is the Air Force suddenly, Air Force Magazine, putting out an article about UFOs when they haven't said anything about UFOs for years? It's like there's a campaign to get them back in the midst of things and quell the public, you know.
Let me throw a hypothetical answer at you. Perhaps.
Okay.
Speculation. Perhaps, I subscribe to the idea that disclosure is happening every day due to the work of real, genuine ufologists. Little by little, atom by atom, molecule by molecule. And perhaps we have now gotten to the point where we're way too close to the whole truth. And so they've got to run some interference. What do you think?
Well, that sounds like as good an excuse as any as I can find for this seemingly strange behavior. And incidentally, this has been one of the busiest years I ever had. I'm an old guy now. But this year, since the first of the year, I've spoken in Saudi Arabia and Poland and Brazil, in Newfoundland and California and New Mexico and Lawrence, Kansas and Atlanta. I was just up in Michigan. I don't know what's going on. Shag Harbor, Nova Scotia. Busy as a bee I am. And I thought I'd be less busy as I got older. So, and there are a bunch of people, go to my website, www.stantonfriedman.com. They'll find a list of upcoming conferences, and two I should mention because they go together. Something has happened that's never happened before. A state, New Hampshire, has, after great deal of consideration, decided to honor a UFO case with a historical monument.
Yeah.
The Betty and Barney Hill case will be celebrated its 50th anniversary, September 23rd through 25th, in New Hampshire, near Lincoln, New Hampshire, Indian Head, right near where it happened. And there is a plaque. Now, Kathleen Martin, who did most of the work in our book, Captured, she's Betty's niece. She will be leading a tour of the area. She'll be talking. I'll be talking. And before that, the end of August, Labor Day weekend, September 3rd, in the town of Exeter, New Hampshire. Remember the book Incident at Exeter by John Fuller?
Yeah.
Well, they're having their third annual conference. And last year I was there and spoke, and we had a full house. And I'll be there again this year. So there's two events coming up in New Hampshire. But there's a whole bunch more on my schedule. And again, I don't know why, but for people who say they want to attend a conference, there are plenty of them out there. And this is unusual. You know, these are hard times financially and stuff. But apparently people are willing to go out to these things. So,
well, you know what that shows is that there is a heightened interest in UFOs and things extraterrestrial. So as you're going around to all these many, many conferences, you get to meet a lot of people. You talk to a lot of people. You hear the things that these people are concerned about. What would you say would be the thing that is most on people's minds as you've traveled around and met them in all these conferences? What's the thing that you think might be the most prominent?
It seems to me the most prominent thing is a recognition that we've never had before, that our galactic neighborhood seems to be heavily inhabited. That is, when you look at the Kepler space satellite, you know, the contrast between Frank Drake saying there may be 8,000 places in the whole galaxy where they can send out signals, radio signals, and the Kepler suggests that there are 8 billion places in the galaxy. And so people are excited about this notion that, my goodness, there seem to be planets all over the place out there.
Yeah.
And some of them a lot older than ours. And, you know, it's no longer crazy to talk about an inhabited neighborhood. And if I said that 50 years ago, you'd have laughed your head off, or somebody would have. So I think that people are recognizing that the notion that there may be living beings, thinking beings out there more advanced than we are who could travel here is becoming much more accepted. And the SETI people are fighting a fighting reaction. You know, their funding got cut off, and they're raising a little money, but Paul Allen hasn't bought the next 40 radio telescopes. I think people are recognizing that, well, there's a line I use that is given a response that indicates this. I've said, you know, these guys insist that if aliens were coming here, they would have sent us a message first. They don't say why or why they would use techniques suitable for our primitive capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And the line I've used is that, you know, Columbus didn't send messages, smoke signals, to the Indians before he headed this way. And that resonates with people. They get the idea. So we're going through a stage where we're slipping away from a Copernican view. You know, the sun's in the middle of the universe and so forth. It isn't. And we are going around the sun, but we're not the big dots either. So we're going through a whole paradigm shift, if I can use that phrase. And I think people are aware of that. At least from the way they talk to me, they're buying into it. And I like that.
You know, I think instinctively, people sense something big is afoot. Something big is happening. And I've talked with people who, I mean, look, I know you know this, but let me say for our audience, because they may not have considered this or thought about it, I don't talk to people just who are in the UFO extraterrestrial enthusiast community. I'm just like you. I talk to people of every stripe. And some of them absolutely think UFOs are crazy. And all of them sense something big is going on. Something's going on right here. We have a break taking over, and we will be back right after this. To the Kevin Smith Show. Let me welcome those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour. Welcome aboard. We're glad you're here. And my sincere sympathy to you for whatever it is that kept you away for that first hour. My guest this evening is Stanton Friedman, and we've been talking about, I think, some really interesting stuff here. The most recent part of our conversation has to do with the way things are changing, and people sense it. They use, depending on whether they're sort of tuned in and a part of UFO extraterrestrial information, they'll use different ways to describe it. But everybody I talk to says, yeah, something big is up. And they sense that essentially and metaphorically the ground is moving under their feet.
Let me give you an example, Kevin, of something that happened. At the 42nd Annual Mutual UFO Network Symposium in Irvine, California, 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks and a couple of days ago, the keynote speaker was Story Musgrave. Now, he's an astronaut who's been in space 6 times. He repaired the Hubble telescope. He's got a half a dozen degrees and 20 honorary ones. And he had the courage to give a keynote address with some wonderful pictures he's taken from space at a UFO conference. That's never happened before. I mean, there's been interest on the part of astronauts. And the foreword to my book, Flying Saucers and Science, was written by Dr. Edgar Mitchell, who was the sixth man to walk on the moon. But to appear as a keynote speaker at a UFO conference is really quite something.
Yeah, that's that. I would say that's pivotal. I would say that's really pivotal. But, you know, he's an interesting guy. He's not only an astronaut, he's an architect. He's a horticulturalist.
He's a medical doctor.
He's a medical doctor. I mean, the guy is absolutely brilliant. Just a brilliant individual. All right. One other thing I want to throw at you and get your comments on, and then we'll open up the telephone lines for our audience to participate in tonight's show. The big story, I guess, out of NASA recently has been that, hey, you know what? We think we have found water flowing on Mars.
Yeah.
Now, for me, it's like, okay, you guys are late to the dance, but I'm glad you got here. But, I mean, I understand that, you know, they have to go through certain scientific processes to be able to make that statement. But what they didn't say is, and if there's water on the surface of Mars, that proves we haven't been telling you the truth about the atmosphere on Mars. Because they've been telling us that the atmosphere is so extremely thin that there cannot be liquid water at the surface, ever. That it goes right straight from ice to vapor. And, I mean, I've heard them, I've seen them on television talk about it. I've read it on their website. And what they're not saying, which I think they need to say, is we think we found water flowing on Mars, and that means everything we've been telling you about the atmosphere on Mars is false.
Yeah, and the history of the planet, too, after all. And the kicker here is people don't seem to recognize when they say, well, man couldn't live there. And, you know, I point out you couldn't live in Las Vegas either 150 years ago, but you can terraform it. You can make it suitable for life. You build a few things, you take special precautions about certain things, and so forth.
Yeah.
And, you know, the history of Mars may have had cataclysms. It may have had past civilizations from elsewhere. As soon as you allow for getting to our solar system from another solar system, then all bets are off. There could have been settlements established, colonies established, penal colonies, whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
And that changes everything. As soon as you get rid of the close-mindedness that has gone into the astronomical perception of the world in which we live, they've been wrong about just about everything. They were wrong about the surface of Venus.
Oh, yeah.
Wrong about the surface of Mars. Wrong about the moon. The moon has water, too.
Yeah, a lot of it.
And how many years did we hear that it doesn't have any water? I mean,
yeah.
You know,
so see, I think it's possible.
My mind's made up.
I think it's possible that all these things coming out that you've just been listing, I think it's possible. It's their version of moving towards disclosure, but we'll see. I want to open up the telephone lines and invite the audience to join us in this discussion. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. If you're in the USA or Canada, please use that number. If you're outside of the USA, outside of Canada, You can call that number. It'll work from anywhere in the world, but we recognize that international long-distance calls can be expensive. And so for you, we have something called a flash message. You can go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, scroll down till you see the picture about tonight's show. You'll see a picture of Stanton Friedman. Right above that is a link that says flash message. And so if you're not in the USA, not in Canada, you can use that option to participate in tonight's show. Let's go to the telephone and caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Tony from Denver.
Hello, Tony.
Thank you for taking my call, Kevin.
You are certainly welcome, sir. What's on your mind?
Well, Mr. Friedman, this is my second time I've gotten to talk to you here on the KSS, and I can't begin to tell you what an honor it is.
Thank you very much.
Recently, you were on MSNBC to talk about Apollo 18. You raised the question, what difference does it make to us if UFOs are real?
I brought that up, yes.
What if it changes our view of ourselves? Who's going to decide who negotiates for the planet? And who in the U.S.
Yeah, those were
hold
some of
election?
The questions. Yeah, it's not an easy question to answer. People think, who speaks for planet Earth? Well, they'll land on the White House lawn. But I'm sorry, the President of the United States does not speak for planet Earth. There are about 7 billion people on this planet of ours, and the United States only has 310 million. A lot of other people out there, the Chinese 1.3 billion, and India 1 billion. So what sounds like a simple question becomes a very complicated question. And it makes a big difference in how we view ourselves. We act like we're it. We're at the top of the heap. We can do whatever we please. Nobody else is out there to judge us, et cetera, et cetera. But that's not the way it is. If you listen to the reports of interference with our nuclear weapon systems, for example, it's obviously a question of concern to our visitors. And I don't blame them for being concerned. It's a question to me, and I'm a nuclear guy, because I know how destructive those weapons can be. And if, you know, people can't seem to get through their heads that we are a threat to the neighborhood. Not only is there nobody who speaks for the planet, but we have willy-nilly developed technologies, nuclear fusion, for example, that will get us to the stars in reasonable times if we want to spend the money. If I were an alien, I'd be worried about that, because we haven't shown any signs of good sense. We build weapons. We don't feed starving kids. This is a sick planet. So recognizing what the reality is should be important for what we do in the future. What kind of a world do we want our great... I've got a great-grandson. What kind of a world do we want him to grow up in? Continue the kind of efforts we've made? We have people going broke so we can have more weapons? This is crazy. It's a sick planet. And so the question of UFOs is not a theoretical discussion for science fiction writers trying to come up with a theme. It's the real world in which we live. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. I haven't seen the movie Apollo 18. I don't think anybody has yet. It doesn't open until after the 1st of September. But, it's hypothesis, its basic underlying premise is that we did launch 18 and 19, and we found crazy things on the moon, and they're not nice things, and, wow, now what does that mean if there are visitors up there? And, raises these kinds of questions we've been talking about. That's exciting. And I hope you noticed that Mr. Radigan on MSNBC did not crack one crazy comment. He was respectful. He was sensible. There wasn't any hint of ridicule. It's kind of nice to see that finally on a major show.
Yeah, and it seems that a corner has been turned, not for all of the media, but there has been a corner turned, and they are treating UFOs with a little bit more sensibility now.
Well, I'm glad. Maybe I'll live long enough to see it fully accepted.
Yeah.
What a dreamer I am.
Tony, did you have another question or comment?
Yeah, I have another comment. I really appreciate your willingness to do the hard work, Mr. Friedman. Thank you, and God bless you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the comment. Nice to be appreciated.
It is, isn't it? Tony, thanks for the call. You know, before we get away from this caller, hang on. I'll get to you here in just a second. Apollo 18 actually did launch. They just didn't call it that. Remember, they went up. They used the Apollo, what should have been one of the Apollo rockets that was already built and paid for, and had the first docking with the Mir space station. So it would have been Apollo 18, except the Apollo program was over, but that it was that rocket and that capsule, and so it actually did go up. But 19, the scuttlebutt out there is that there was a 19 and a 20. And, you know, who knows? Who knows? All right, to the telephone.
I don't know. somebody was complaining about my being on the show as if I were saying yay verily, and I didn't say yay verily. I said many government agencies have demonstrated that they can spend loads of money in secret, that secrets can be kept, important secrets.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't say Apollo 18, you know, that this movie is really facts in the guise of fiction. But I definitely will say that many Americans don't appreciate the fact that huge amounts of money has been spent on black programs about which they didn't learn until decades later. And that brings some people up short, especially the ancient academics and fossilized physicists who say, governments can't keep secrets, Stan. What do you mean? Look, this is Dr. Seth Shostak said, hey, look, this is the same government that fouled up with FEMA and Katrina. This is the same government that operates the post office. Now, what's that got to do with the NSA, the CIA, the DIA, the NRO, the OSI, all these alphabet soup agencies that are spending billions of dollars in under security?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Let's take this call. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Victoria from Washington.
Hi, Victoria.
And Dr. Friedman.
Mister.
I'm sorry?
It's Mr., not Doctor.
Okay, Mr. Friedman. Okay, I was wondering if you saw, it was a program on Discovery Channel on Sunday, this past Sunday, called Curiosity, quote, Alien Invasions, Are We Ready? Host Michelle Rodriguez brings together top scientists to explore what would happen if aliens invaded Earth. And you mentioned that that last part was a quote from the synopsis. And you mentioned, well, you think there's a paradigm shift occurring, and I'm thinking, well, I think they're trying to put the brakes on it because every single person on that program was absolutely negative about this alien invasion and you know, how many ways can they kill us and destroy Earth? And of all people, I didn't recognize any of the scientists that they had on there. It's like they were all names I've never heard of before, except for Michio Kaku, who kind of gives credence to, you know, the possibility of the fact that these aliens, you know, these extraterrestrials or whatever, are going to attack Earth, they're going to destroy Earth, and they're going to kill people. And I was just wondering if you saw that program, and if not,
I didn't see the program. I was with Michio Kaku on a panel in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, of all places, in January at the 5th Global Competitiveness Forum. Believe it or not, the keynote speaker was Bill Clinton. At the first one, it was Bill Gates. And they had a 75-minute panel. There were five of us. Michio was one. he's always stressed that, well, maybe with wormholes and fourth dimensional space-time warping and all this kind of stuff, that aliens could get here. But he hasn't really looked at the relevant UFO data. He hasn't studied that. Also, I think that he has a limited view of the fact that we are a threat to other civilizations. Every civilization's first duty is to protect itself, its national security or planetary security or local galactic neighborhood security. And we like to think we're nice guys, but, you know, we exploded our first H-bomb way back in 1952, 3-mile-wide fireball, 10 million tons of TNT equivalent. Let's face it, the Russians exploded one. It was 57 million tons of TNT equivalent. If you were an alien, wouldn't you be worried about the idiots who do such things? We've had hundreds of nuclear weapons tests. So I think other civilizations, either they would have destroyed us already if that was their goal, or they have learned to live at peace with their neighbors but want to make sure that their neighbors don't spread bad scenes, as is their wont, all over the rest of the place. So I wish I had seen the program, and I'm sorry I didn't. But most of these guys have not given serious consideration to this question at all.
Maybe someone has recorded it, and you can get a copy of it. I recorded most of it. I didn't get to get my thing on until I'm going, oh my gosh, they're trying to stir up fear, more fear, that the aliens are going to destroy us, and this is completely going against this disclosure thing and trying to, you know, slam the door shut on it, and that the ETs or aliens, who, like you say, could have done this, you know, a long time ago, you know, with the 7 billion people on Earth, now they're going to do it. But it just sounds like this, they're trying to creative fear mongering attitude that they're out to destroy us, to start, you know, World War III with the aliens. And wasn't it Oppenheimer or someone on his deathbed said that the last enemy, you know, after the terrorists, after the Russians, after the terrorists, was going to be the extraterrestrials? And that just
Werner von Braun.
Like what that program was trying to do.
Wernher von Braun was saying that there were plans afoot, he'd heard years ago. And Dr. Carol Rawson,
right,
worked with him, came up with the same information. And
yeah, that, you know, that's right. I couldn't remember who, but yeah.
Well, let me throw something into the mix here. Let me throw something.
That program. That was the Discovery Channel, you said.
Yeah, let me throw something into the mix here. There are a lot of big names. You mentioned Dr. Kaku, Victoria. A lot of big names are coming out saying, whoa, we better go slow here. We better not be trying to contact or have contact with these aliens. And at this point, at this stage of the game, that's a little bit like telling a woman that's 9 months pregnant, don't have babies because it might hurt. It's too late. This is on.
Exactly.
That's right.
Well, I'll get off the air. Thank you very much, and great work for both of you. Thank you.
Thanks, Victoria.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's too late. This is on, and you know, for better or for worse, we're about to be face to face with these neighbors in a very brief period, very short period of time, I think. It's. I think that's going to happen. 623.
Right.
I'm sorry?
I said I think you're right.
Ah. Oh, that's good. I like to be right. 623-444-5889. That's the telephone number. And if you put that series of numbers in that order into that little thing called a telephone, it will transport you right here to the studio. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Ryan in Puget Sound.
Hello, Ryan.
Stan, I was wondering what your thoughts are on the story regarding Sergeant James Norton with the Fort Benton Fort Benning incident. Have you done any vetting?
You know, I actually spoke with him on the phone, and I spoke with three other people who talked to him, and we're going to follow up on that. And I haven't heard recently what the heck's been going on. I've been traveling too darn much. Is there new news about him?
Well, I was just wondering what your thoughts with your if you have, because you've done checking on people in the past, like Bob Lazar and others, and I know that you do a lot of digging, so I just wanted to see if you found anything.
Well, I was a little upset when I first heard that he was going public with his claims about having pieces of wreckage that had been recovered without having had any analysis done. If you've got the material and you've got analysis from a decent lab in hand, then nobody can give you a really hard time. But I understand that his commanding officer told him to shut up, that others told him to shut up, and I'm not surprised at that because he set himself up for that. So it's in my gray basket at the moment. I'd like to find out more. I've just been too darn busy. It's a strange story. There were strange things that happened at Fort Benning, Georgia back then, because I know other people who told me about them, but whether he's got pieces or stuff, I don't know.
Yeah, you know, it's odd, the remarks. I did a show with him that I put on YouTube, and the remarks that people leave, and these are people that ostensibly are interested in UFOs, and you can tell from some of the remarks that these people have had their head in the sand since the 1970s, some of them. Not all of them, but they act like he's the source of this story about a battle at Fort Benning. He's not the source of that. The very first person to come out and talk about it was John Vasquez and published a book about it. And this has been going on now for years that he's been trying to get other people to talk about it.
Yeah.
Norton is a corroborating testimony to John Vasquez. And people will go on there and leave comments that, you know, you can tell from reading it that they woke up yesterday morning and someone had written UFO on the wall in their room, and so today they're into UFOs. Some of those comments. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Caller, can you hang on through this break?
Sure.
All right, you hang on. You'll be first up when we come back from break. Ladies and gentlemen, we will be back right after this.
Brian from Burnaby, British Columbia, Canada. When a topic in history or science or the paranormal is too outré or controversial for conventional media, where can we go for information? To the Kevin Smith Show, of course. I'm a big fan.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Stanton Friedman, and we have a caller online. Let's go straight to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Okay, this is Ron from Maryland.
Hello, Ron.
I want to talk to Stan about something. You know, we're always talking about how, you know, we're always ahead like 100 years in the space program, or 50 years, or 200 years, there had to be a time when that happened. And, you know, it didn't happen in 1952 when their UFOs were all over Washington. Do you think it happened when we took over Germany and got von Braun and all that technology, and that's when we really took off?
Well, look, there's no question that the German scientists were the most advanced in the world during World War II. and that there was the old joke about are the Russian, the German scientists working for the Russians better than the German scientists working for the Americans, you know?
Yeah.
But certainly there have been saucer sightings for thousands of years, not tens of years. And there were sightings, you know, all back through time. There's a fine book, The Bible and Flying Saucers, by Dr. Barry Downing, looking at the Old and New Testament, for goodness sake. That goes back a few thousand years. So in the modern day, during World War II, there were sightings. Both sides thought they were the other side's secret weapons. It's only when they got together after the war, pilots like to talk to each other, that, oh, I thought they were yours. No, we thought they were yours, you know.
But how do we understand the technology? In other words, okay, we had some crash saucers, okay? How do we finally understand the technology to move us so far ahead in the space program is what I'm trying to...
Well, I think the difference is that after World War II, there were huge amounts of money spent. Money makes the difference. Look, when I was working on nuclear airplanes in 1958, we at General Electric Aircraft Nuclear Propulsion Department, just outside Cincinnati, Ohio, we spent $100 million that year, employed 3,500 people full-time, of whom 1,100 were engineers and scientists. We never had programs like that before the Manhattan Project during World War II. It was unheard of to spend huge amounts of money on research and development. So the big difference, in other words, I'm not giving the aliens credit for our rapid rate of change of our technology. I'll give the Cold War some credit for it, and the fact that there were huge amounts of money available to spend because, and you know, we both sides used it against the others. There's a story that President Eisenhower and Khrushchev were talking, and one of them says to the other, you know, my generals tell me that your guys are getting ready to attack us. We have to be prepared. And the other one says, you know, it's funny. My generals tell me the same thing about your guys. So, you know, that's how you justify large expenditures. And some of that money was wasted. I saw wasted money on government-sponsored R&D programs. But you spend enough money with enough smart people. And one of the strange things today is how the academic community thinks the only place research and development happens is in academia. That's nonsense. Yeah. Los Alamos employed 8,000 people, for goodness sakes. High-level people, I dealt with them, not only Los Alamos, but Sandia and Hanford and Oak Ridge and Lockheed and GE and all the rest. And you talk to the people, well, I'll give you an example. Two different people have told me, Stan, if Roswell happened, they would have to pull half the physicists from colleges around the country. You gotta be kidding. There were loads of people with high-level security clearances, fine equipment, great competence. Dr. Vannevar Bush, who was head of the Office of Scientific Research and Development during World War II, ran roughly 100 projects involving thousands of people developing new technology. That included radar, it included the proximity fuse, and a whole bunch of other areas of new technology.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you really are talking about a lot of that stuff, you know.
Don't give the aliens credit.
Yeah, well, I know you're not. You weren't hot on that book the day after Roswell. You weren't too thrilled about that. So
Colonel Corso,
I wasn't going to go there. You know, so. But another thing is, I got a question for Kevin. Yeah, we have all these probes going to Venus, and I don't know. They've lied so much to us about Mars and everything else. Wouldn't it be intriguing? Because I know they can parachute things down to the surface of Venus. So the acid rain thing, I don't know if it is really real, but wouldn't that be something if it's a hothouse effect and there's like large animals living on there and it's not like what they're really telling us? That would be wild.
Yeah.
For a long time, we were told by the astronomers that Venus was a tropical paradise. Couldn't see the surface because of clouds of water vapor, of course. Well, a hell of a lot of measurements have been done that show it isn't water vapor, and it's not a tropical paradise. It's sulfuric acid, and it's about 600 or 700 degrees hot enough to melt lead. So the astronomers have been wrong consistently about conditions in the solar system and the galaxy and the universe. So we haven't been told the truth about much of anything, but part of that was because of our ignorance, of our jumping to conclusions. Astronomy is a democratic science. The wheels get together, vote on truth, woe be unto he who disagrees, he's got no place to publish. And then they have a new election in 20 years and new ideas come along. And look, you know, it's easy to forget. We didn't know there were other galaxies besides the Milky Way until the 1920s. They've been there all the time.
Yeah, that's when we discovered we had a universe.
If Venus was like a moldy rock and all that, like you're saying, why would they send more probes to Venus than Mars if it's like a nothing but, you know what I'm saying?
Well, let me say this. I think that probably the descriptions that we have of Venus are probably fairly accurate. But having said that, I absolutely do not buy the idea that that means there cannot be life there. When these guys at NASA, and not just NASA, but they're included in this, and they're the ones we see on TV, so they take it on the chin more than anybody else. But when they tell us, well, it's too inhospitable, it's inhospitable for life, they're saying it's inhospitable for them, for their life, for us humans.
Look at the bottom of the ocean, Kevin.
That's it. There is all over this planet. There are forms of life living in conditions that will absolutely kill you, graveyard dead. You can't live there, and that's right on this planet. But there's life living there. And I absolutely, truthfully, from my toes to my head, think there's life on Venus. And I think there's life on virtually every planet in this solar system. And the idea that it's inhospitable and therefore there can't be life there, I think that's complete nonsense.
Yeah, yeah.
You mean we might be doing some terraforming?
Yeah, we might be.
By the way, I heard a story about Morgellons. I heard that there is something out there to fight. I don't know if it's true or not, but I heard it was liquid silver. That's what I heard. I don't know.
You're right. I think it's colloidal silver is what they call it.
Yeah.
Ron, thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. All right, Stanton, I've got a couple of quick questions for you based on what we've all just been talking about here. Number one, do you think that we do have in our possession recovered crashed UFOs?
Yes. Absolutely, and I'll just mention Roswell and Aztec. There's a new book due out by Scott Ramsey and his wife Suzanne, who have done an incredible amount of research on the Aztec crash of March 1948. That's Aztec, New Mexico, in the northwest corner there. Suzanne is from that area, and that has made it a little easier. I wrote the foreword for the book, and I'm just waiting desperately for me to get my hands on a copy. Yes, I think we have wreckage. I think we look there from Varginha, Brazil, from other crashes, I think. And remember, I have to admit as a scientist, just because you got a piece of something doesn't mean, first of all, that you can figure out how somebody made it, or second, that you can duplicate it. It's kind of like the theory for a nuclear weapon is pretty straightforward, but getting the fissionable material isn't. That takes a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't realize during World War II, there was a facility at Oak Ridge, Tennessee, that was running gases through little holes in a nickel membrane, if you will, to enrich uranium-235. That building was a mile long and used 5% of the power that was being produced in the United States in secret. So the theory wasn't so hard, But building the facility, operating it, there were loads of people working there. They didn't know what they were doing. You know, when the dial shows this, you do that. When it shows that, you do something else. So there have been huge projects, and I don't think any of those were related to recovering wreckage. But, you know, there's a picture of me in my book, Flying Saucers and Physics, with my hand on the Apollo 12 command module. And what is incredible is, to me, as an old guy, when I was growing up, I thought a high-speed aircraft in the atmosphere had to have a pointy nose and a sharp wing. You know, like the X-15, the first plane to go supersonic.
Yeah.
And here's this round, blunt body that's going 25,000 miles an hour in the atmosphere. Well, we know that they ran wind tunnel tests on round, blunt bodies in late 1947. So the idea may have come from somebody saying, hey, how do these guys do that? Let's check. Ooh, look at that. There's a new approach. Let's give it a try.
Mm-hmm.
Technological progress comes from doing things differently in an unpredictable way. So we see that in a lot of different directions. A laser isn't just a better light bulb, in other words. Entirely different physics. And we've only had lasers for 50 years, and I don't think they came from the aliens.
All right, second question. Do you think that we have in our possession recovered alien bodies?
Yes.
Why?
I've been saying this for years, and I think so. And let's face it, you don't throw them away when you do your first analysis. You keep them on ice, and 5 years later you do another analysis. You know, and 5 years later you do another, because your techniques have greatly improved and changed over the years. So I think we have bodies. That doesn't mean we can make other bodies, obviously. And certainly we were concerned about, biological contamination. Remember how when the astronauts came back from the moon?
Yeah.
They were in
quarantine.
They were isolated, that's the easiest way to put it,
mm-hmm.
for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Because we're afraid of back contamination. That raises some questions, doesn't it?
It does. Did they think that was a problem because they'd been hanging out at the alien saloon? Caller, are you willing to hang on through this next break?
Sure.
All right, you hang on. We have a break coming up, and I'll get to you first up after the break. Yeah, maybe they were hanging out with the aliens down at the alien bar, and so back here on Earth, we were all afraid they may have picked up some alien germs. We'll be back right after this, so don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Stanton Friedman, and we have a caller on the line, so let's go straight to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Just John from Mesa, Arizona.
Hello, John.
How you doing?
Doing well, sir. What's on your mind?
Well, I would just, you know, we've talked many times, and, you know, I have a firm belief that we're probably low on the totem pole as far as intelligent life in the universe. But if disclosure comes, how much of the disclosure do we believe from these people who've been lying to us for at least 60 years?
Good question.
That's a very good question, and it may depend on what form disclosure takes. Do they show us movies? Do they put a body out behind a glass cage with people who certify that they were inside and saw them and, you know, checked on them and did DNA analysis and all kinds of things? Or do they just have some people speaking generalities? I think it would be a natural tendency for all of us to be very dubious about anything the government says, because they haven't earned our trust. you know, not only by spending billions of dollars without the public knowing what's going on, but they have intentionally lied over and over again about this subject. So why should we believe them now, no matter what they say? And, of course, there is the question of when did the United States, the Soviet Union, China, show any willingness to share their most secret materials with the other guys? And disclosure from one of partial truth isn't enough. You know, who knows what games are being played? So you raise a very valid point. How do you earn the trust of your people when you got 60 years of misrepresentation behind you? You know, that's a very valid question. And part of the problem here is the press. The journalistic community hasn't done its job. They bought lie after lie. I mean, just go back a very simple thing. We're supposed to believe that the head of the only atomic bombing group in the world, Colonel Blanchard, who went on to be a four-star general and vice chief of staff of the Air Force when he died of a massive heart attack, that he and his intelligence officer, these are the guys who dropped the atomic bombs, you know, and stuff like that, that they couldn't recognize a weather balloon. Now, who would believe that? But the New York Times believed it. Who would believe that the New York Times would highlight the crash test dummy explanation for the bodies that were recovered when none of them were dropped until 6 years after Roswell, at least, and when they were 6 feet tall and 175 pounds and were in Air Force uniforms? Because when you do the drop tests, that affects the temperature and it affects the drag on the body and so forth and so on. Now, would anybody rational believe that could be accepted as an explanation? But they did accept it. Front page above the fold, New York Times, no better slot on any newspaper in the country. So it's time for these guys to do their job, too. And I have said, if anybody, any group of media people, if you will, would spend half the money that the Washington Post did on the political Watergate, on blowing the lid off the cosmic Watergate, it shouldn't take more than 6 months. Are we going to be ready for that? I don't know. Are any of these guys willing to? I don't know.
Well, it makes me
so very... So you raise a good question.
It makes me very suspicious when we see these shows now with the media and so-called scientists trying to create a fear of alien invasion and alien intelligence. And you fall back on the logic that you came up with, and why would they have anything to do with such a primitive society that, you know, kills each other off?
Well, I think they'd come here to keep us from going out there. They call it quarantining where I come from.
Well, a good example is when the first white settlers moved into Africa. You know, you don't hang out with the lions and the tigers. They will kill you. So what did the settlers do? Well, because lions and tigers were dangerous to them, they took means to neutralize that danger in the immediate area around their camps. And everything from fences to actually going out and killing the most dangerous of the lions and tigers. I can't see where any other race coming here looking at us would look at us any differently than those settlers looked at lions and tigers. The most dangerous of us probably have something to fear. Or it wouldn't surprise me. But, I mean, you know, the ETs might consider, they might actually be doing all the rest of us a favor if they neutralize the more dangerous of us.
I agree.
Yeah. John, do you remember you came and visited me at my studio when I was in Arizona, right?
I did.
Okay. Shortly after that, I left Arizona. And shortly after that, from Texas, I did a show where I asked the question, what would disclosure look like to you? What would it take for you to say, okay, that's disclosure? And in the course of that show, 100% of the people who called in, and we had call after call after call after call after call that night, 100% of the people who called in said, well, if you're talking about someone from the government doing disclosure, no matter what they said, I wouldn't believe them.
And I think for the vast majority of people in government, the same thing holds true.
So you think that the government wouldn't believe itself?
Well, if the government came out and told us that something about extraterrestrials or aliens, I would still seek out another source to find out the facts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gee, you don't trust the government. How amazing!
Well, and that's
a universal disease.
You're not afraid to say that this goes in my undecided file. You're not afraid to say, well, the evidence points in a different direction. And so, you know, that's why I think that many people respect you, because you're not afraid to say there are things I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I have a very large gray basket.
John, I want to thank you for the call. Excellent question, and I appreciate you calling. That'll have to be our last call of the evening, because we just don't have time. If we took another call, we wouldn't have time even to hear what the caller had on his mind. Stanton, I want to thank you for being with us this evening. I know you are very, very busy, and I appreciate you taking the time to be with us. Tell us again your website.
www.stantonfriedman.com. It lists my books, it lists my speaking engagements, DVDs, papers you won't get anyplace else, even a new book, UFOs and Aliens, that I haven't even seen in the bookstores yet, but it should be there soon. You can get it from me, because I wrote two papers that are in it. My email address is given on the website and stuff, so I'm easy to find in beautiful Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada. If you visit, make it in the summertime.
All right, if you will, just stay on the line with me for just a moment as I bring this flight of the Kevin Smith Show in for a landing. Ladies and gentlemen, I think you can see, I mean, if you listen to this show night after night, I think you can see over the past several months that this thing is on. And, you know, people involved in the investigation and the research and reporting on UFOs are telling us this is on. Hang on to your hat, keep your socks nailed to your legs, because the future is going to blow your socks off if you're not ready. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.